Okay, Tuesday, April 2nd, 2025. Still letting a few people in from the so-called waiting room, which is actually not a room. But anyway, we use all these, metaphors. There's a better word for it, though. Anyway. This is not a website. There's no site. Or I could say this is not a pipe. What is that? It's a sea nipazu peep. Anyway, look it up. Dadaism. That's, I start off with complete mild incoherence. I am mildly incoherent right now. Was in the land of tornadoes and flash floods in Little Rock, Arkansas, where every 5 minutes my phone was getting a siren alert on it that there were flash floods. At one point, after the when the tornado alert came at night, I was watching a basketball game on my computer, so I just went out and sat in the hallway because that seemed like a safe place in the hotel. Tornado did not hit, thankfully, but some of the people, one of the people who had invited me there, was telling me about how their car was destroyed in a tornado a couple of years ago. So it's a real thing. But I'm now back in sedate Berkeley, where everything is lovely and calm, peaceful and progressive. I looked around when I was in the Little Rock airport yesterday. I went, all of these people voted for Trump. Oh, God, that was a bad thought, to have in my head. Anyway, we will do our usual 20 minutes of meditation. There's a few people still arriving late, and then I have some various little topics. Could go back to the science section, or I don't know. See what emerges during the sit. Our hot water heater also seems to have broken down last night, started flooding the basement. So, it's one of those delightful mornings. But, it's always like so striking to realize how dependent we are on this infrastructure that for thousands of years, people never took a hot shower, Most or millions of years. I mean, it was only the people who found like hot springs that got to have hot water. Or maybe, I don't know, I guess after they discovered fire, that anyway, I'm not a historian. Let's meditate and that'll at least I might be talking, but hopefully I'll be more coherent. So just settling into your posture, whatever you find most supportive of being awake and aware, relaxed, settled. And you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. Really not staring at the screen at this point. Not much value in that. It's a good break from screen time, even though we are doing this through our devices. And just feeling your body, being here in your body. Depending on your time zone, it's morning or likely later in the day. And How does your body feel at this time of day? Maybe you've had some caffeine or breakfast, or maybe you've gotten some exercise, or maybe doing some work. So when you stop and just feel the body for a moment. You get to see where you are right now. It's a changing state, right? Always changing through the course of the day. So cultivating mindfulness of the body and mindfulness of the energy in the body and the feelings. This helps us to stay more grounded and equanimous through the day. And letting the attention come to rest on the breath. A very simple experience of breathing in and breathing out. You don't have to do anything else. Nothing more is asked of us. What does that feel like to just not have to do anything but breathe and be aware of breathing? Takes the attention away from the breath. There's some worry or concern that bubbles up. Some memory or plan. Just let that go. Come back to breathing. This practice reveals the limits of our control over our own minds. Even though we have the intention to stay present with the breath, we may find ourselves completely swept away with thoughts. And of course, it varies. It's very different from sitting to sitting over time. Persistence and sustaining practice can bring a gradual calming. Certainly, the value of working at this. But one of the keys to our practice is how we relate to the distractions that arise. We can be undisturbed by the disturbances of mind. We undercut their impact. Accepting this is how things are. At the same time, applying an effort to be present. With the breath, it can help to apply a closer attention to the sensations and set the intention to stay with the whole of the breath, the beginning, the middle, the end, and the next beginning, and so on and on, breath to breath. Hey. Well, as I said, I'm just back from a trip to Little Rock, Arkansas, which, really interesting to, as I live in an area that's l more liberal and sort of more Buddhists. Interesting to go somewhere where the Dharma Center is really like an island. It's a real refuge for the people who go there. And of course, very kind, very generous people. And just well, I mean, it certainly partly makes me appreciate where I do live, but also just the importance of community. There wasn't a big crowd, but and so it seemed like, well, most of the people knew each other, and were all really part of this very strong sangha. So, gee, what do I have to talk about today? I was looking at a little bit of Bhikkhu Bodhi this morning, talking about sila, essentially. I'm not sure that I actually want to get into that. It's a little, it's a little hardcore in a way. It gets into the karma and the rebirth and everything. So I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I don't have anything on my mind really. I've been writing. I guess I've mentioned that, and I kind of got to a place where I was writing about concentration, and it just really, it's interesting. Concentration is, I think, one of the most difficult topics to delve into, because there's so much. There's a lot of debate. Historically, has been a lot of debate over the necessity for concentration, and what level of concentration we need, to develop insight. And as lay people who don't have presumably time to meditate for hours every day, our potential for the kind of concentration that you read about, and well, I could be more specific about some of the texts. I mean, I was reading Bhikkhu Bodhi's book on the Noble Eightfold Path, and when he talks about, one-pointedness, for instance, which is, clearly a, it's kind of how we almost define concentration. It's not really meditative concentration, but it certainly doesn't define the whole of meditative concentration. But when we think about concentration just as an ordinary word, we think about being one-pointed, just focused on something. And when I read about that and the sort of tradition around that, I kind of feel like I'm not sure I've really had much of that, and yet I've had a lot of states that I considered concentrated, but not so one-pointed. So this is where it becomes even more complicated. There's a model Let's say there is a model from both from the suttas and then from the commentaries, the Visuddhimagga, which is the classic text on meditation that was collected about 500 AD or Common Era. And the Visuddhimagga, which means the path of purification, in the Theravadin world, that's often given priority over the suttas themselves, the earlier and more original teachings, because they kind of organize things, and then that collection became sort of the go-to model for many aspects of Buddhist meditation and Buddhist practice, and particularly in the Burmese tradition, you see that a lot of the monks in that tradition, they're working out of this model, which, you have to, I guess, get pretty familiar with the suttas and the Visuddhimagga to be able to sort of see where people are coming from. But the Visuddhimagga is very like systematic, and at times somewhat opaque, like what does this mean? And then but then there's sort of like traditional interpretations of what it means, and then you wind up like feeling like you're kind of like a few layers away from something that the Buddha said, at least, and that you're kind of, I'm not going to say getting, I'll say this and then I'll back off from it, that you're edging toward cult-ish stuff. That it starts to feel like magical thinking, or like, what are we doing here? And it's certainly not a cult, because it doesn't have the main characteristics of a cult: the charismatic leader, the control, the sex and money. But in terms of it, kind of like getting you to believe in a system that isn't all that clear. That's kind of hard to completely justify everything that's in it. It's more like a belief system. It's got that a little bit. Anyway, the Visuddhimagga builds off the teachings in the suttas to say that there are five elements to the development of concentration. So everybody, get ready to write down your list here. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekaggata, which I don't know how to pronounce that last one. So the first two are sometimes called aiming and sustaining. Bhikkhu Bodhi has another term for them. Glad I finally thought of something to talk about. Sorry. And so this makes perfect sense, like vitakka vichara, that first you decide, oh, I'm getting like with the breath, let me point my attention at the breath, right? That's kind of the first thing we do, like find the breath and like, okay, now paying attention to the breath, and then try to sustain it. So vitakka is the aiming, and the vichara is sustaining. If you have Bhikkhu Bodhi's book on the Noble Eightfold Path, you can find this under the chapter on concentration. Yeah, here we go. So here he says, so he calls vitakka initial application of mind, and vichara sustained application of mind. Initial application of mind does the work of directing the mind to the object, takes the mind, lifts it up, and drives it into the object, the way one drives a nail through a block of wood. It's quite a powerful image. And I think it's helpful to think, oh yeah, I'm supposed to really like penetrate into this, not just like, oh, I'm breathing, sure. This done, sustained application, vichara, the sustained application of mind anchors the mind on the object, keeping it there through its function of examination. To clarify, the difference between these two factors, initial application is compared to the striking of a bell, sustained application to the bell's reverberation. So those are the first two qualities, which I think make a lot of sense and are helpful just in terms of understanding what's going on. Now, where the first challenge comes, I would say, is sustaining, right? It's not so difficult to initiate attention on the breath. Sustaining it without the mind wandering is quite difficult. And many of the techniques that are taught are really aimed at sustaining, helping us sustain the attention. So things like counting the breaths or doing sweeping, the scan, body scan is aimed at sustaining the attention. A mantra is meant to help sustain the attention, ground the attention. Loving kindness. So some of the, you can, like, loving kindness is similar to the body scan in that it's not taking a single object and just hitting it over and over. It's not the same bell over and over. Like with the breath, it's like hitting the same bell over and over. With the body scan, it's like a different bell each moment, right? You're moving through the body to different places. With loving kindness, it's a different bell. You're using words and phrases and thinking of different people, different or different collections of people. So that's a strategy, right? To have a kind of mobile object of attention. That's one of the things that can help us when the mind is particularly dispersed and distracted. So many of us, I think, spend most of our time in this area, in the effort to sustain. And it is also, I will note, one of the four efforts, right? If you're familiar with right effort, there's the effort to avoid, abandon the unwholesome, and then cultivate and sustain the wholesome. So sustaining again is part of effort. Okay, so what but there's, according to this tradition, there are three other factors to right concentration. Rapture, which is piti, you've heard me talk about this before, PITI. This third factor is the delight and joy that accompany a favorable interest in the object. Well, happiness, sukha. The fourth factor is the pleasant feeling that accompanies successful concentration. Since rapture and happiness share similar qualities, they tend to be confused with each other. The two are not identical. This is in a talk of his, he gives a great analogy. I think I've shared this before, that PT, it's, if you're listening to a jazz band, the PT is like the saxophone that's kind of capturing the attention, quite intense and kind of blaring. And then sukha is like the piano playing behind the saxophone. So it's only, you only really notice the sukha when the saxophone solo is over. Then you notice, oh, there's this. So when you're working with these energies, well, I'm going to talk about them more, but if you're working with them, and you get the PT, then eventually it quiets down, or you try to quiet it down, and then you see that behind it, lurking in a very pleasant way, is this sukha, that as he calls it, happiness. It's not a great that's not a great translation of the word sukha, but so these the thing that's then becomes challenging or whatever, just kind of we're faced with this thing of like, what PT? What? I don't remember feeling rapture when I was meditating. Many people have had very pleasant experiences, right? And energies and things happen. But for most people who aren't doing and have not done extensive retreat practice and haven't cultivated these qualities, PT and sukha tend to come up just at almost random moments, and they're not really controllable or sustainable. You just happen to be, maybe you're on a 5-day retreat, and on the fourth day there's some kind of surge of energy at one of the meditation periods, and you're like, whoa, that's wild, and it comes and goes. And because we don't teach how to work with that, it goes. It may come, but it goes. And it takes particular effort and guidance to develop these things. And I am speaking out of experience that I spent quite a few years working with these energies, and ultimately I felt that from I finally was I mean it was productive at the time, but at the same time it's not really where I want to put all my energy, because it becomes almost like a it becomes not just almost, it becomes an effort to just create these states, to arouse these qualities, rather than just letting them sort of appear spontaneously out of your practice. So let me read a little bit more. The fifth and final factor of absorption is one-pointedness, which has the pivotal function of unifying the mind on the object. Which, I mean, it sounds great, but I don't really know what it means, frankly. Because these five factors are associated with absorption, with jhana. Here, I think here's a little passage that can be helpful. When concentration is developed, these five factors spring up and counteract the five hindrances. Now, this is an interesting reflection. Each absorption factor opposes a particular hindrance. Initial application of mind, so the vitaka, through its work of lifting the mind up to the object, counters dullness and drowsiness. Now, this I think is helpful, right? It's like I'm falling asleep. How do I counter that? Well, there are various ways to do that physically, but the mental way to do that is to become more engaged with the object, more interested. And interest is even a better word than engaged, because interest is like when someone says something that really like kind of excites you. It's the like the student sitting in the back of the class in high school and just sort of nodding off, and then the teacher's like, so let's read this passage about sex. Let's read Lady Chatterley's Lover or something. All of a sudden, kids like, what's this? What are we reading? This sounds cool. I don't know if that's appropriate example. So initial application counters dullness and drowsiness. Sustained application, so that's one of the hindrances, right? You're familiar with them. If you're not, by the time we get through this, you will have heard about them anyway. Sustained application by anchoring the mind on the object drives away doubt. Interesting. Rapture shuts out ill will. So, yeah. So, and all right. And happiness excludes restlessness and worry. One-pointedness counters sensual desire, the most alluring inducement to distraction. So I'm a little bit on this because here I think when I read this, I feel a little more related to these somewhat abstract and sometimes distant qualities. So rapture shuts out ill will. Like, in other words, when you're feeling a lot of bright, uplifting energy, you're not in an aversive mind state, you're enjoying things, it's bright, it's exciting, it's enjoyable. So, and I will say that I think another thing to be said is that these qualities are actually common to meditation in subtle forms. It's when they get developed more fully that they become absorption factors. So that you can have a bright, uplifting feeling without having an absorption level of PT. Happiness excludes restlessness and worry. That makes sense, right? You feel happy, you're not, and sukha is, I think a better word for sukha is contentment or a feeling of peace, serenity. It's a calmness. It's very similar to tranquility. I'm not sure that it's actually different from tranquility, or it kind of shares the same mood as tranquility. So it's soft. The su in Pali has a meaning of things being sort of soft and gentle. But I don't know why I randomly know that, because there aren't that many Pali syllables that I can define. But su is one that's like, and you see it in different words occasionally, that I can't think of any other ones right now. But and then this last one is useful too. One-pointedness counters sensual desire. So I remember hearing Bhikkhu Bodhi one time talking about that concentration cools the mind, which is another nice sort of description and image for how concentration works. So it concentration cools the mind. So or the like lustfulness, is a kind of heat, right? And craving is something that's got this rising energy. It's, craving is a going out of yourself. Concentration is going into yourself. But the image to me of cooling and settling, again, many of you have been on retreats and done enough meditation to know, like, yeah, you get to these places where you're just not really triggered. There isn't a lot of like grasping in the mind. It's not like you've let go of all desires, but you're just not really like feeling like you need to get something to be okay, to be satisfied. And so these qualities, I get tangled up, so I apologize for that, because I was introduced to these qualities in the context of absorption practice. I sometimes kind of forget that they're actually common to our meditation, but just in these sort of less obvious ways. So it can be helpful to just notice when any of these qualities are there, or on the other hand, if you're experiencing a hindrance, to sort of try to be like, well, which of those five qualities of concentration is meant to counter this hindrance or this disturbance? And particularly, I think that first one, that the vitaka as countering sleepiness. Like, oh, let me just really get focused here. Let me really, I'm not just like vaguely paying attention, breathing in and out, but oh, what does it feel like exactly? Let me really apply the attention, and the mind becomes more engaged and the body then becomes more alert. So, so I've been, it actually helps me to talk about this, because I've been struggling a bit trying to write about concentration. And it's just a reminder, kind of looking at Bhikkhu Bodhi and stepping back from these five factors as only associated with absorption, but actually being ordinary to meditation. In fact, I was, the one time I encountered Pawak Sayadaw, who is a master of jhana and teaches jhana. That was one of the things he said in that little meeting. There was a small group of people at a yoga center in Berkeley, and I brought up these qualities, and he was like, "No, these are there, and all meditation experiences have these five qualities. That's just that they're, when they're developed to a higher degree, they become jhanic qualities." So I don't know if that's helpful, but I thank you for your attention and for your patience. I want to mention before we open it up that anybody who's in the Bay Area, I am teaching live tonight, in person, as we say, at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery at 7:30. So you are welcome. I would love to see people there in person. And this Friday is the Spirit Rock class on Zoom, which is changed to 6 p.m. Pacific, so 6 to 7:30, if you're interested in getting some more Dharma. And I've been going through the 12 steps. So this being April, I'll be on step four tonight. Or not tonight, but on Friday, today, whatever time, it's relative. So any questions, any comments, happy to hear anything if anybody had wanted to speak. Well, well, Bill, are you trying to talk? You look like you're trying to talk. No, okay. Debbie, I saw a physical hand rise.
I don't know, I raised it, but I did. This is just it, I don't know. It I really appreciated you saying that at everything you shared today, when we close our eyes and sit and begin our practice, we're going into this process at a level, right? And it's just a
Right.
continuum of experience. And today, I just really appreciated you offering and reminding us that going through these five stages, vitakka, vikara, piti, sukha, and the one-pointedness relates to the antidotes for the hindrances.
Yeah.
There's so much intertwining between all of the teachings of the Buddha, and they all are just, for me, it feels like they're all just offering us this opportunity for massaging each other. It's so intertwined. We're gonna, I don't know, I'm starting to get a little out there, I think, but the
Good.
beauty of oh yeah, here I am meeting the hindrances again because I've got this heap of aggregates, composing my body of presence on this earth. And I'm going to meet them all the time at various levels. And so another list of looking at, okay, this is how our meditation practice can evolve if we, are there and present and want to open our awareness to it without judgment. But just noticing where we are. And I think even in this chapter here, it says just notice where you are and don't push yourself to the next level. Just be fully present and notice, wow, how did I get here? And what is it opening up to me? Maybe I need to sit in Vitakka for a while because I'm pretty dull, and that's okay to let go of judgment, not feel like I need to attain something else. Just showing up. So this, yeah. I just really like, I think I'll be focusing this week a lot on noticing as I'm going into the meditation practices where the hindrances are showing up and how they are. And then I don't know, can you skip a level?
Exactly. It's not, there's another thing about the Visuddhimagga that it like makes it seem like your brain like works in this like mechanical way, and of course things don't unfold in that way, right? And skip a level or jump around, move, that all of a sudden you get really one-pointed, or suddenly there's like this PT, even though it didn't feel like you were concentrated. And but also, I appreciate you just saying like there's such a tendency to hear something and think, oh, I'm supposed to, I need to get somewhere, rather than seeing like Vitakka, just getting that nail banged in. Really, that you can spend plenty of time on that, and you can go back to that. You can kind of be okay. I'm okay. I'm sitting. Maybe you've been sitting. Maybe you're doing an hour sit, and it's like after half an hour, you're like, okay, I'm doing okay. But let me go back and like reapply my. Let me bang the nails a couple more times and see if I can get even penetrate more into the object. That because that alone. I mean, within that, in a way, to me, the Vitakka is the same as the Ekaggata. It's Ekaggata, something like that. The one pointedness, because when you have the image of banging the nail in, that's very like one pointed, right? And it's like the nail is pointed, and so that when there is that. That's where really the one-pointedness comes from, in a sense. So, to really be willing to go back and keep reinforcing the initial application, that the realizing, like as with all five of these, that the level of it can be vary to a great extent. You can get to a very deep level of initial application and sustained application. But it's okay to also kind of go through them, oh, let me just get dirt. Let me do dirt. Oh, do I feel any joy? Is there any kind of sense of that? Is there what, how much one-pointedness is there? So there's that kind of thing of tracking it all as you're talking about, like just being aware, where am I? What does this moment call for? See, Bill, I knew you wanted to raise your hand.
I didn't want to leave you hanging there, so
Yeah.
anyway, thanks for the meditation today. I kind of really needed it. I'm dealing with a little health issue, and then I talked about meditation. I mean, I've always had a pretty secure practice where I felt like I could just kind of sit down and everything would be cool in a while. This and then the political atmosphere that's going on right now, I'm finding myself just a little bit distracted, to say the least. And it's, to me, it's a hard thing to break through, you know. I don't typically use guided meditations, and I'm using it today with you. It seemed to make me settle a little bit easier. Maybe that's what I need to do for a short time, just to kind of, you know, get back on track or whatever. I still sit, and then 15 minutes into it, here it comes, you know. It's really been an odd thing with me, because I've had it, like I said, a good practice for many, many years now, and it's something that I know is temporary, it's impermanent, and it's going to go away and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, at the moment, that's what's going on. So, otherwise, how are you?
I don't, well, let me respond to what you're saying, because it's one of the things that happens, when you practice for a long time, you get into these periods of time when it's like, oh yeah, okay, it's like this. And then when it changes, it can be a little disruptive, because you're like, wait, I thought I really kind of had my practice was kind of like this. And now, and yeah, I mean, and then you remember, oh yeah, everything's impermanent. But it's hard, because you're describing that way in which it feels like you've lost something, or and it's more difficult, or it's not as helpful. It's not, you're not getting that peace that you kind of depend on, and so there's also a way in which you kind of got to open up the window a little. There's two, I'm going to go two ways with this. Open the window a little bit more, the kind of mental space. So it's like, okay, to hold it in this wider space of like, okay, it's just clouds moving through, it's just tornadoes moving through. They're impermanent. At the same time, what I found myself doing this past weekend was just going, I'm just gonna go back to trying to be only with my breath, because I tend to sort of start with my breath, but then sort of being in my felt world that I talk about a lot, being in the feeling world, and that physical energy world, which are really kind of the same thing, and sort of breathing with then emotions and letting them come through and just allowing and feeling. And then I just felt like this weekend, like I'm getting too muddled in here. I'm just gonna go back to just breathing in, breathing out, So I guess what I'm getting at is like, play with your point of view, with the tightness versus the spaciousness, and see what might help, just to bring a little bit of ease to the lack of ease,
Yeah, and it's interesting. I have reverted back to some of the old stuff I used to do when I was first learning to meditate, and using counting techniques, whatever, I can get into more of a concentrated state, or the Thich Nhat Hanh poem, keep slow, all that, and just keep repeating, just to get into that mode of concentration where I can stay there for a while. Yeah. So, well, I appreciate it, Kevin. Yeah.
And you have to be careful that you just have to really watch what's behind that effort, because those are useful tools. But if there's an underlying aversion to what you're feeling, then you're using that tool to push away, or to get to a particular place. And that's where, as I say, I like to sometimes step back and go, oh, just allow that aversion to be there. Don't be bothered. Just can I just not be bothered by the fact that my mind is agitated? Be careful of that. But otherwise, yeah, using some extra concentration techniques can be very helpful. Thank
Good to
you.
see you. Thank
Yeah,
you.
you too. I am really on the verge of getting out, and at least, I might text you later in the week about doing some chipping and putting. So I have to find the time. I was about to go, but Ori, please go ahead, and then we'll wrap it up.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize we were out of
No,
time.
no worries.
But I have a practical question, sort of the opposite of the last question. So I have lately been so I've been increasing my the meditation time or the time that I meditate every day, and I've been having these. I mean, you touched upon this a little bit before the meditation, I think, or maybe it was after. But I've had these sort of very brief, extremely pleasant sensations, almost like when I like. The closest comparison I can think of is sort of being on MDMA, if I can phrase it. But just extremely sort of briefly, and as soon as I notice it, I sort of I know I sort of it sort of slips away. I mean, I understand this is probably some sort of clinging and trying to hold on to it, but it would be extremely nice to extend that period a bit, realizing I might be sounding like a an addict, which I am, but
Well, you're among friends here. It's okay.
is this any tips, any tricks to
Absolutely. Thank you. That's a great question, and it is a really important one to how to, that we don't talk that much about, because we do kind of spend much more time talking about the hindrances and everything. So, what do you do when something really pleasant happens? And it definitely takes a delicate kind of non-interfering to when that happens. It first of all, it's a very nice sign. It's a very, I'll say, positive sign that these qualities are ripening. So that's great. You want to. One way of working with this is to shift your attention from your breath or whatever your meditation object is to the feeling itself. And then just open to and welcome the feeling, not going toward it, but receiving it in a sense. And you can kind of have the breath in the background, so the breath is keeping you stabilized, kind of keeping you relaxed. But you're letting this feeling come through and really fill you up. And what it says in the suttas is that one drenches and steeps, you kind of permeate yourself with the feeling. You let these feelings really fill you up. It's if you've ever had a experience with loving kindness where you kind of felt this radiance, it's a similar thing. And it is like a drug experience. It's one of the things people, one of the reasons people compare meditation to psychedelic or plant medicine experiences, that it's this it's that's when the piti, the rapture, and the sukha are really starting to blossom. And so it's great to just like let them in, breathe with them, welcome them, and you can. The language of the suttas to me is kind of like a guide to how to relate to them. The idea of, oh, can I let myself just be absorbed in this, steeped in this? So steeping, I don't know if you're familiar with that word. Steeping is what we do with a tea bag. When you put a tea bag in hot water, you're steeping the tea, right? So it's this very, the images are very much like liquid images, sort of water, right? And of being drenched in something. So yeah, just see if you can just play with it. But absolutely, the thing that will immediately cut it off is when you react to it. When you're like, wow, what's this? Or that's amazing. Or wow, I'm having that experience. You know, as soon as you the self steps in, that's I'm having this thing, then immediately it will disperse. So you have to just stay with it as a feeling experience. You know, I'm supposed to go upstairs, and but I don't hear my wife stomping around, so I think it's okay for me because we've got to deal with this hot water heater. And anyway, and until I hear her, because she's working too, until I hear her coming out of our office, I'll answer one more question, Steve.
Well, it's not so much a question. Everything that you were just
Comment.
describing was, because I had a few questions about this concentration thing, but what came to mind was that when you started talking about with Bill the golf and everything, is that this is one of my favorite times of the year, and watching the Masters golf tournament. Not so much about the golf, it's about the history of the event. It's about the Augusta National Golf Course. It's about the beauty of the green lawns and the trees and the people and the conversations and the music. And it's like a very exciting moment to realize that there's so much beauty in the earth and still going on even around the insanity. So, I mean, I just started thinking about that. Get concentrated on just this whole thing about distracting myself to get away from the insanity of what's going on in our country and what's going on in the world, is that there are some brief moments in time where you can experience that joy and pleasure of Mother Nature and Mother Earth. And like I said, it's not just about the fact that it's a golf tournament. It's just the whole thing. I mean, I can even hear the music in my head already. It's like pretty funny stuff. That's why I just wanted to share that.
Okay, thank you. I have to. Thank you all for showing up. I plan to be here next Tuesday as well. And again, if you're in Berkeley tonight, drop by the monastery, or and then Friday night at 6 p.m. the Dharma and Recovery for Spirit Rock. So, thank you all for showing up,
Go
and
fix your water heater.
yeah,
Have a
bless.
beautiful day. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Steve.
See ya.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
Thanks, Kevin.
Kevin. Goodbye.
Okay. Mike, take care.
Thanks, Kevin.
Bye.